Light on the Path by Mabel Collins. Comments, Part 3. Before the Voice Can Speak in the Presence of the Masters. Speech is the power of communication. The moment of entrance into active life is marked by its attainment. And now, before I go any further, let me explain a little in the way in which the rules written down in Light on the Path are arranged. The first 7 of those which are numbered are subdivisions of the 2 first unnumbered rules, those with which I have dealt in the 2 preceding papers. The numbered rules were simply an effort of mine to make the unnumbered ones more intelligible. 8 to 15 of these numbered rules belong to this unnumbered rule which is now my text. As I have said, these rules written down are for all disciples, but for no one else. They are not of interest to any other persons. Therefore, I trust no one else will trouble to read these papers any further. The first 2 rules, which include the whole of the part of the effort which necessitates the use of the surgeon's knife, I will enlarge upon further if I am asked to do so. But the disciple is expected to deal with the snake, his lower self, unaided, to suppress his human passions and emotions by the force of his own will. He can only demand assistance of a master when this is accomplished, or at all events partially so. Otherwise the gates and windows of his soul are blurred, and blinded, and darkened, and no knowledge can come to him. I am not, in these papers, proposing to tell a man how to deal with his own soul. I am simply giving to the disciple knowledge. That I am not writing, even now, so that all who run may read, is owing to the fact that supernature prevents this by its own immutable laws. The 4 rules which I have written down for those in the West who wish to study them are, as I have said, written in the antechamber of every living brotherhood. I may add more, in the antechamber of every living or dead brotherhood or order yet to be formed. When I speak of a brotherhood or an order, I do not mean an arbitrary constitution made by scholiasts and intellectualists. I mean an actual fact in supernature, a stage of development towards the absolute God or good. During this development, the disciple encounters harmony, pure knowledge, pure truth, in different degrees, and as he enters these degrees, he finds himself becoming part of what might roughly be described as a layer of human consciousness. He encounters his equals, men of his own selfless character, and with them his association becomes permanent and indissoluble, because founded on a vital likeness of nature. To them he becomes pledged by such vows as need no utterance or framework in ordinary words. This is one aspect of what I mean by a brotherhood. If the first rules are conquered, the disciple finds himself standing at the threshold. Then if his will is sufficiently resolute, his power of speech comes, a twofold power. For as he advances now, he finds himself entering into a state of blossoming, where every bud that opens throws out its several rays or petals. If he is to exercise his new gift, he must use it in its twofold character. He finds in himself the power to speak in the presence of the masters. In other words, he has the right to demand contact with the divinest element of that state of consciousness into which he has entered. But he finds himself compelled, by the nature of his position, to act in 2 ways at the same time. He cannot send his voice up to the heights where sit the gods till he has penetrated to the deep places where their light shines not at all. He has come within the grip of an iron law. If he demands to become a neophyte, he at once becomes a servant. Yet his service is sublime if only from the character of those who share it. For the masters are also servants. They serve and claim their reward afterwards. Part of their service is to let their knowledge touch him. his first act of service is to give some of that knowledge to those who are not yet fit to stand where he stands. This is no arbitrary decision made by any master or teacher or any such person, however divine. It is a law of that life which the disciple has entered upon. Therefore was it written in the inner doorways of the lodges of the old Egyptian brotherhood, "The laborer is worthy of his hire." "Ask and ye shall have" sounds like something too easy and simple to be credible. But the disciple cannot ask, in the mystic sense in which the word is used in the Scripture, until he has attained the power of helping others. Why is this? Has the statement too dogmatic a sound? Is it too dogmatic to say that a man must have foothold before he can spring? The position is the same. If help is given, if work is done, then there is an actual claim, not what we call a personal claim of payment, but the claim of co-nature. The divine give, they demand that you also shall give before you can be of their kin. This law is discovered as soon as the disciple endeavors to speak. For speech is a gift which comes only to the disciple of power and knowledge. The spiritualist enters the psychic astral world, but he does not find there any certain speech unless he at once claims it and continues to do so. If he is interested in phenomena, or the mere circumstance and accident of astral life, then he enters no direct ray of thought or purpose. He merely exists and amuses himself in the astral life as he has existed and amused himself in the physical life. Certainly there are one or two simple lessons which the psychic astral can teach him, just as there are simple lessons which material and intellectual life teach him. And these lessons have to be learned. The man who proposes to enter upon the life of the disciple without having learned the early and simple lessons must always suffer from his ignorance. They are vital, and have to be studied in a vital manner, experienced through and through, over and over again, so that each part of the nature has been penetrated by them. To return, in claiming the power of speech, as it is called, the neophyte cries out to the Great One, who stands foremost in the ray of knowledge on which he has entered, to give him guidance. When he does this, his voice is hurled back by the power he has approached, and echoes down to the deep recesses of human ignorance. In some confused and blurred manner, the news that there is knowledge and a beneficent power which teaches is carried to as many men as will listen to it. No disciple can cross the threshold without communicating this news and placing it on record in some fashion or other. He stands horror-struck at the imperfect and unprepared manner in which he has done this. And then comes the desire to do it well, and with the desire thus to help others comes the power. For it is a pure desire, this which comes upon him. He can gain no credit, no glory, no personal reward by fulfilling it, and therefore he obtains the power to fulfill it. The history of the whole past, so far as we can trace it, shows very plainly that there is neither credit, glory, nor reward to be gained by this first task which is given to the neophyte. Mystics have always been sneered at, and seers disbelieved. Those who have had the added power of intellect have left for posterity the written record, which to most men appears unmeaning and visionary, even when the authors have the advantage of speaking from a far-off past. The disciple who undertakes the task, secretly hoping for fame or success, to appear as a teacher and an apostle before the world, fails even before his task is attempted, and his hidden hypocrisy poisons his own soul and the souls of those he touches. He is secretly worshipping himself, and this idolatrous practice must bring its own reward. The disciple who has the power of entrance and is strong enough to pass each barrier will, when the divine message comes to his spirit, forget himself utterly in the new consciousness which falls on him. If this lofty contact can really rouse him, he becomes one of the divine in his desire to give rather than to take, in his wish to help rather than to be helped, in his resolution to feed the hungry rather than take manna from heaven himself. His nature is transformed, and the selfishness which prompts men's action in ordinary life suddenly deserts him.